This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August 15th, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Are the harvest lows in place? One analyst told us so earlier in the week. We'll find out if the others agree today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Prusaki from USDA NASS in Washington, D.C. Our panelists today in studio are Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView in Morton, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question, Dan. Thursday, you told us the harvest lows were in, so we'll start with you. Do you still believe yourself?
Todd, I said pre-harvest lows, not harvest lows.
I know. I knew that when I asked the question.
And what I meant by that, I kind of felt that we had probably reached a point of support in the marketplace, then that the market would probably take a breather here. For the next maybe 3-4 weeks, see what kind of weather pattern we do finish out the growing season with, and let the market kind of either confirm or negate USDA's projections.
Ellen Dearden?
It sure seems to me like the summer lows are in, as that's the way I would characterize it. I really think that odds are very good to make new lows in this October time frame, both on the corn and the beans.
And Greg Johnson?
I would say the lows are in. If, and this is a big if the CFTC doesn't continue to persuade speculative funds to bail out of some long positions, reclassifying funds as speculators instead of commercials, if that continues to happen, the fundamentals probably take a back seat to the sheer selling pressure that we saw on the opposite side a year and a half ago with just pure buying coming in.
Can you back that up with facts? I don't recall seeing that they actually forced somebody to do that.
The rumor is that they had another fund reclassified today. Now, again, you can't prove it, but there is talk, and there was another one last week, and you saw some pretty big volume days on those 2 days. So nothing to prove, but if that is going on, and if it continues to go on, like I say, the fundamentals kind of take a back seat, and we probably haven't seen our lows then, but from a fundamental point of view, you would think a $2.50 break is enough.
Is CFTC meddling, do you think?
I don't have any proof of that, but I do know that that would not surprise me if there are some unofficial discussions going on between funds and CFTC regulators and commission houses. But I don't have any evidence that that's going on. But you do know that something is going on in the marketplace with the type of fund liquidation that we have seen over the past 4 to 5 weeks. And the other thing is, anytime you get a big move like what we've seen here in corn and soybeans within a short window, that creates financial problems. Usually somebody's on that wrong side of that position. And we saw here this morning, I think, or yesterday afternoon, an energy ethanol company had gone had lost several million dollars in their long position. They must have bought their corn needs during the month of June. The Iowa floods must have made a panic. So I think there's more of that to come. I think that is probably the big negative in this market, is it's turned into a liquidation money game. And that is a fundamental. Money is a fundamental. I know people don't want to say that, but that is a major concern. And I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you've had trade groups, farm groups, retail groups. You've had about every group you can think of go to the CFTC, complain about fun activity, wanting them out of the market because they were distorting the market. So I think probably if that would be true, the regulators would feel that they do have some political clout to do that.
Well, let's get back to the numbers at hand now. We'll start with the grains and do the Chicago Board of Trade wheat to begin with, follow up with the corn. September wheat this week, a high of 888, a low of 761 and three quarters. A settlement price 59 cents higher at $8.24 and a quarter from last week. July futures 898 and three quarters, up 55 and three quarters. September corn this week, $5.59 and a half the high, the low at $4.85 and a quarter. September settled at 529 and three quarters, 31 and a quarter higher. December futures at $5.49 and a half were 31 and one quarter higher from last week. USDA, of course, Tuesday released the crop production report, the WASDE numbers, and an update of the harvested acreage. It now says U.S. farmers for corn will harvest a 12.288 billion bushel crop. The trade had expected that to be an 11.9 crop, or closer to a 12 crop. July estimate was at an 11.715 billion crop. Last year, the crop was a 13 billion bushel corn crop. This year's ending stocks now 1.57 billion. That's down from the July estimate of 1.59. Next year's carryover stands at 1.133 billion bushels, up from the July projection of 833 million bushels. But because USDA increased usage, it doesn't account for all of the increase in the production numbers. Global carryover for this season now stands at 122.46 million metric tons, down from the 124.64 in July. And for next season, it's 112.38 million metric tons. That's a little bigger than 105.3 that it forecast in July, but still well below the 122, down some 10 million bushels and or 10 million metric tons. And it seems to me that the global numbers may hold the key here, given the 10 million metric ton difference in the carryout, Ellen, from this year to next. Is that the case?
I think people, when they first look at this report, totally ignore the world numbers, and after a day or so, really start keying in on them. As I look at the growing situation in the northern hemisphere for corn, I think that we could be a lot more comfortable than what the U.S. numbers suggest, even if we come in at this 12.2 or 12.3 or wherever the crop really is.
So are you suggesting that there's a bigger crop than the 12.3 out there?
I am suggesting that this is our starting point. This is our number to look at. I think we're somewhere in this 12.2 or 12.3 at this stage of the game. Certainly, Joe will give us more insight into that later.
And we'll ask him that question. And I don't know whether he'll be able to give us an official answer, but maybe we can talk him, well, probably not even to an unofficial answer on that question. What do you think farmers, Ellen, should be doing at this stage of the game? Is there anything to do with old crop corn sales, covering new crop sales? Are they getting a position in the marketplace that they haven't had at this time?
The thing that I'm focusing on right now is a lot of folks who have old crop corn still in the bin, not much old crop beans around, but old crop corn in the bin. I think that needs to be moved at this stage of the game on any kind of strength. I am also concerned about basis risk as we get into fall. I think there's a lot of guys who have hedged arrives that need to limit that basis risk by locking in the basis on that as well.
Can they do that at the Andersons still?
Yes, they can.
Can they do it for 2009?
Yes, they can. Where basis for corn is has actually improved a little bit. Of course, it improved from a very wide number. We were 50 under in central Illinois about 2 weeks ago. Now we're 40 to 42 under. and we'll just wait and see. But next year basis is 40 to 45 under at the Andersons for 09, and most people are 50 under. So you can lock in basis, but it is historically a wide basis.
What are farmers asking you? What do you think advice for them at this time is?
Well, I suppose trying to get, at least my observation looking at market years in the past, when you have a late June, early July rally and a strong decline into late July, early August, it's kind of hard to get much of a rally going during August. I do think any kind of rally here will be somewhat limited unless we get into an unexpected period of extreme hot and dry weather that would pull down crop prospects or maybe an early frost. So I guess I would agree with Ellie that if you're in a situation that you still have some old crop corn around, either you try to sell it on some rallies in here over the next couple of weeks, lower your downside objectives, and or get ready to store it and see if this thing can kind of get some traction here later on this fall.
Across the board, do you think, and I'll start here with you, Greg, do you think that USDA, that this USDA crop production number is the biggest for the year? Is it dead on? Or will it get smaller from, or will it get larger from here?
I think it, because of the sheer increase from one month to the next, and I like to hear Joe's explanation, but I think if they were looking primarily at stock count, which is definitely higher than what we've had in the past as populations were increased, we did have a lot of wet spring situations that may have lessened the nitrogen, and so we may see some smaller ears. So we may have a lot more ears, but they may be a little bit smaller. So if that's the case, this report in August was just sheer numbers, and maybe the number in September is more of a weighted ear type thing. So I would think maybe the number's a little bit lower, but not dramatically so. I mean, we can quibble over whether it's 12.1 or 12.2 or 12.3. The bottom line is that's enough corn. We're not going to run out of corn. I think if we're going to get a rally, it's going to be because of the same reason we got a rally last year. We didn't run out of corn last year. We had to buy acres. And so the market will have to look ahead and try to figure out what price it takes to buy 3 or 4 million more acres of corn.
Dan, the size of the crop, bigger or smaller from here?
I've heard comments both ways, but I would say that the crop scouts that I've talked to that's been out checking around that do it for a living feel very comfortable that the national average yield is 155 and feel that it even could go higher. But we still have 6 weeks of weather in this market. I know everybody wants to seal the deal up, but we still have 6 weeks of weather that can change yields 3 to 4 bushels either direction, I think, probably. So what's out there does look pretty good, though, but we do, like I said, we still need 6 weeks of weather yet.
Alan,
good weather.
I think you probably gave us our answer, but you can give us that one and then follow up for me, because down here Greg tells me that this 1.133 billion bushel carryover is going to be enough corn. I want to know if you think that's actually true or not.
I think we're going to see declining demand as we go through this year based on maybe some cutbacks on these ethanol plants. If we're cutting back petroleum use, we're not going to need as much ethanol to blend with it, and we're not seeing the margins put back together either. So I can see us with some declining use. So I think that we've got enough corn unless we end up with an early frost or something along that line.
Soybean numbers like this for the week: September, a high of 1296, a low at 1163 and three quarters. A settlement price in the September at $12.11.5, and remember, this is a new lead, the August expiring, up 12.5 cents from the August contract last week on its settlement. November beans at $12.19, 38.5 cents higher from last week. Here are the numbers that they came out as they came out on Tuesday from USDA. Production stands now at 2.97. The trade had expected a 3 billion bushel crop. That's the same as the July estimate. Last year, we raised a 2.585 billion bushel crop. This year, the ending stocks estimated at 135 million. Next season's bin should be just as full at 135 million bushels. Global carryout projection at 49.25, and that's up from 48.84 million metric tons in July for this season. For next year, it's 49.28, and up from the July estimate of 48.87. Is there any reason for the market to buy acreage anywhere around the globe at this point?
At this point, no. 6 weeks from now, if we find out that the yields are a couple bushels less, all of a sudden that carryout gets shrunk by 30 or 40 million bushels, and then things get awful tight. So the fact that we planted beans 4 weeks late, the fact that we had a very wet spring, and beans notoriously don't like that wet early start, the fact that it's been a little dry here in east central Illinois with very little rain in August, I think that things can change. As Dan says, we still have 6 weeks of weather left, and I think the jury's still out on beans, and I think the USDA would say that. We don't know what we have for beans, so we're using a normal yield of 41, 42 bushels. They lowered it a bushel this month. We just don't know whether we have 40 or 50 bushels yet.
Well, it seems to me we've taken the risk premium out of both corn and beans in the last month's time, and for with a six-week time period in front of us, we've got to make some changes.
In just 2 minutes, we'll be back when we talk with Joe Prusaki. He's the director of the Stats Division at the National Agricultural Statistics Service, USDA, Washington, D.C. You're listening to the Commodity Week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a period of very warm and humid weather a week ago, this week was almost fall-like across Illinois. Temperatures remained below normal much of this week, with highs generally in the upper 70s to low 80s and lows in the 50s to low 60s. That puts average temperatures this week 5 to 6 degrees below normal across the state. The weather this week was more typical of the first week of September than the first week of August. Along with the cooler temperatures came dry weather, both in terms of rainfall and in the moisture in the air. It was much less humid this week after near record dew points at some locations in Illinois last week. Rainfall was limited to a few scattered showers and storms across mostly northern Illinois during the first half of the week, and scattered showers and thunderstorms elsewhere the second half. Precipitation at the midpoint of August is running behind normal across most of the state. It looks like typical summer weather will return to Illinois next week. Southerly winds will become reestablished across the Midwest, and that will mean an increase in temperatures and humidity. Temperatures will be back up to near and perhaps even above normal levels most of the week. In addition, there looks to be almost a daily chance for scattered showers and thunderstorms somewhere in the state. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, August 15th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Here are some of the rest of the numbers as they finished in Chicago for the week. Live cattle futures at the Mercantile Exchange had a high in the August of 103.45, a low at 101.42.5. They settled at 101.67.5, 20 higher from last week. August feeder cattle at 113.90 were down 72.5 cents. And the October lean hogs this week, $78.20 for the high, the low at 75.50. The settlement price in the October, and that's a new lead, at 75.55, down $13.42.5 from last week. Remember, that is a new lead from Friday to Friday. Ellen Dearden, any quick word on the livestock before we get to Joe Prusaki?
Well, you kind of alluded to it. August went off the board. August hogs went off the board this week at a huge premium, $12.50 to the October. That oftentimes what we see is a rally in that next month, the October, but probably not a whole lot since our seasonal weights should be really picking up in here, and we don't have a lot of product demand for the loins.
Our guest this week on Commodity Week is Joe Persaki. He now joins us from Washington, D.C. Joe is the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASS. Thanks for being with us, Joe.
Well, thanks, Todd. It's been a long time since I've been on your show.
It has been a long while since you've been on the show. You've been out of Washington, into Iowa, and now back to Washington, D.C. And we want to know how it is you managed to calculate these big yields this year. Stock count. That's substituted, I suppose, for ear count. Is that a five-year rolling average plus the average weight?
Well, let's see. For the, you kind of hit the nail on the head there a little bit, but I think one of your panelists, they mentioned, huge stock counts. That's true. It's the biggest we've ever seen in the 10 objective yield states that we actually had when we had people out in the field. So it was the largest we ever had. And then and at this time, we can count ears, too. Even though they're small, it's a record high number of ears. And then when you look at, and like you're saying, then what do you do about the grain weight? Because it's fruit, which is ears, times the fruit weight, which would be the grain, the pounds per. I mean, what do you do with it? Is it a five-year average? Well, we look at the five-year average. And the other thing that we factored into it was that our farmer-reported survey, that's where we actually talked to farmers, it was the highest we've ever seen in August, ever.
So that gave you the yield. From here, our estimates, you think, higher or lower, or is there anything that you can look back upon to give you an idea?
Well, the only thing really that, we don't know because there's so much weather factor. I think, again, that was mentioned earlier today, because this was one of the lowest maturity categories when we look at the plants, too, who are out there. It's the lowest maturity category probably since, it's been a while back. It was like 1997, which was roughly the same type of maturity. We've been kind of spoiled here the last 3 or 4 years. That the crop's been pretty well advanced at this time.
But in 1997, if I remember correctly, it got bigger.
Everything did get larger, right? Yeah. So I don't know, but who knows? It all depends on weather on this time. Right?
And one other question: How did you deal with the holes, or how are the samples
with
taken?
The acreage? Right.
Right.
Is that what you're curious?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good one too, because what we did is we increased the sample size in the 6 flood states, what we called them the flood states. It's the 3 ice states plus Missouri, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And then we had that along with a regular objective yield survey. So the first part of that is when we go to the farmer, we have the aerial photo of their fields that we had selected earlier in the year. And we said, okay, hey, what kind of acreage is going on in these fields? If the farmer said, hey, I know that there's like 5 acres to take out of this field, okay, we would subtract that from the harvested area. And when our enumerators are doing the counts, if they would hit a hole, they would skip past it. If the farmer had no idea what to do with any sort of, drown out, skip spots or whatever, then we would keep the acreage the same because if it was a big field, he wouldn't have any idea. Then if the enumerator was going and would just happen to land in one of those spots, then we would count it as zero stocks and that sort of thing. But still, record stocks regardless.
So then, do you feel comfortable then with your harvested acre, or do you think over time that's going to have to be adjusted?
Well, actually, the harvested acre should be pretty good because what we did is we went back to every one of, we call them segments, or roughly 1 mile square piece of land in the 6 flood states. We went back to every one of those at the end of July, first part of August. And re-observed what was going on in those fields. And so there was a little bit, as you saw in corn, a little bit down on planted, a little bit up on harvested, and on beans, big shift on harvested.
Okay, and then on the, so the holes are going to be counted within this average is what you're saying.
If the farmer could not subtract them.
Okay.
When we go, the first part we do is we go visit them. And if the farmer says, hey, I know that there is, so much acreage to be subtracted out.
Then you subtracted that out and put that in your harvested acreage number.
Right. It would be able to be abandonment. In that case, it would disappear.
Okay.
Right. But if the farmer can't tell me, because he said, I don't know, there's a hole someplace out there, I think, but I don't know, I don't know if there's a hole, then we would just say, okay, fine. Then we would just go on. And if we did happen to land in a hole, then we would count that. In our measurements, and it would stay in the acres then.
Yeah, and so is there a common way you get to the fields so that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question because one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that every one of our numerators, when they have one of these samples, there's a random number of rows and a random number of paces for every sample. So when they get the kit and they see it, they say, okay, it's, you know, pick a number or whatever, it's a random number. It might be 30 rows down the edge of the field and maybe 200 paces into the field. It's all random. Sometimes there are like two rows and then, you know, maybe 500 paces, or it could be like, you know, 300 rows and maybe 10 paces. So it's random.
But you're always going back to the same field.
We go, yeah, every month we go back to the same plot and do the, you know, recount them as well. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Anything else out of the numbers that we ought to know?
The one thing is, I think you had asked a little bit about beans. What's the deal with beans?
Right? I did.
It's just the opposite of corn. And I think one of your panelists, they mentioned beans don't like wet weather. Well, we had one of the lower, you know, we call them, it's per 18 square feet is what we're looking at, is it's one of the lowest bean plant count in the 18 square feet that we've seen in a long time. It's been, let me, if I can pull this up here, it's been, oh, jeepers, it's been back, oh, at least since 97 again that we've seen anything like that. But it's a low plant population, and the only thing we can figure is you know, the survival rate, you know, in those flood areas. They just didn't germinate because it was just so wet, or they just didn't make it through.
Can we skip to DDGs and ethanol and some of the usage numbers?
Yeah, see, I really can't help you on those, though.
I didn't think so, but I thought maybe you might have an idea.
Yeah, if I would have had a little more time, I could have talked to the guys, you know, yesterday. You know, there's a different group.
I usually don't prep the guests, but Joe and I wanted to make sure we had some things covered, and I knew that came out of WASDE, but I didn't know for sure whether we could deal with the DDGs with you and how they deal with them as far as feed usage and export. Yeah, Let's skip that along then.
Yeah, that's a whole different discussion. I can't help you on
okay,
that.
Okay, let's go back to the beans again. You say
sure.
Got the smaller plant count that you've had, you know, maybe since like 1997. I guess my question then is, you correlate that to previous years. Did the yield grow from August, or did it kind of held steady, or
it depends. Again, it all depends on the weather. If it turns off warm, who knows? But again, smaller number, you know, think about the plants. I think about it as an area. You know, the smaller number of plants, there's less nodes, there's less lateral branches, so there's less room to put pods on. Now, if the plants get tall, who knows? But again, that's currently translating into, you know, lower pods per 18 square feet.
Okay.
And historically, what does that mean? Well, if you've got less pods, it means bigger beans, generally, historically over time.
Did you have any kind of sampling on as far as height, bean height, or anything like that?
We didn't, but when our numerators are out there, they count the number of nodes, which translates into bean height, you know, the number of times it breaks, you know, direction.
I was just kind of curious to see how you were trying to handle some of these real late double crop bean plantings.
And those are coming in. I think that's what's coming into some of these counts on the bean side, is that we're just not seeing it.
Joe, we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Okay, guys, thanks a lot for having me. I want to thank every farmer that's helped us out with this survey.
Hopefully we'll talk with you again soon, okay?
Hey, take care, guys.
Thanks much. Joe Prusaki is the director of the NASS Statistics Division for USDA. Just one other word on Joe. He did have a long discussion with Dave Dickey, who's director of ag programming at WILL today. And you can see the result of that in our weekend newsletter, which is absolutely free. It's over at willag.org. Just hit subscribe. A final word now from our in-studio panelist, Ellen Dearden of Ag Review in Morton.
Look for choppy action to come into play here. Don't be surprised to see some pretty wide swings in the market again on Monday.
Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Just something that maybe we didn't talk about in the regular session was the dollar has rallied significantly here in the past 3-4 weeks, and actually the decline that we have seen here in corn and soybeans has not been passed on to our foreign buyers.
And Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Normally one or two bushels doesn't make a big difference, but this year one or two bushel yield difference in beans will make a big difference.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.